All right. Welcome to another edition of the True Crime Podcaster. I am Ryan Horn, the host. Hopefully you've had a good week, things going well. Hopefully things calm in your neighborhood. But as you'll see on this episode, sometimes the quiet guy next door, things are not always what they seem. Now, I don't want you to go from here and be all paranoid and think everybody that lives around you is a potential very horrendous criminal, as you'll see in and hear about in this episode, but there is nonetheless, sometimes there's cases where that's just the reality of it, that, again, the quiet person next door is not always what they seem, even though, just as you'll hear about in this case, there are warning signs along the way all the time sometimes, and sometimes they're heated, sometimes they're not, you know, sometimes they're heated and people try to help and take action and it's just not enough, or the person doesn't want the help, doesn't try to get it, and that sadly happens far too many times. But in this case, there were some signs, as you'll see and hear about, which you're able to hear about this because the podcast is just like with the White Collar Crimes podcast. We are sponsored by The Weekend Angler, and check out his YouTube channel, The Weekend Angler. Learn all kinds of cool fishing tips and information. But this is the case of Harrison Graham, and although that may not be a household name for you as far as the world of crime goes or serial killers or anything like that, but rest assured, he was one of the more prolific, if that's a word you want to use, serial killers to ever have been around in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. Never been to Philadelphia, actually. I know one thing I do know about them, they have some of the rowdiest sports fans that are out there, so I don't know, hopefully a visit to the city wouldn't be like that all over, but it is a place I've always wanted to visit because so much history there, Declaration of Independence signed there, and so many major historical events in the history of the United States happened there. Even was early on in the country's history, was the nation's capital for a short while. So I definitely hope to someday get a chance to visit. But some of the people that lived around Mr. Harrison Graham did not have an enjoyable experience at all. Now, who was Harrison Graham, you ask? He was born in Philadelphia. He was the oldest of five children. Now, many times we see this, and it was no different with him. Early on, he showed some signs of intellectual disabilities, and he struggled in school both academically and with behavioral issues. And you see that a lot when I do what's called a pre-sentence investigation report for the judge in my probation work. The academic side is covered, and it's not very uncommon at all, actually, to find that a lot of these criminals, especially violent ones like in Mr. Graham's case, they have a history of struggling not only academically, but a lot of behavioral issues in school. And a lot of times they're frequently suspended, expelled, and very poor attendance rates, very poor performance academically if they get anything out of them at all. So sadly, so far into this case that we're seeing right now, he fits the early profile that a lot of serial killers do, and that was struggling academically to make it along. And he didn't get off to the best of start in that, and a lot of times people noticed at a very early age that he did show some signs of definitely some intellectual deficiencies. And this would eventually cause him to have to drop out in about the 10th grade due to his bad grades and low attendance. And again, that's not that uncommon either in the criminal world. You will see most of the time a solid majority of them did not even finish high school. And, you know, a couple generations ago, like in my grandparents' time and probably a lot of your grandparents' time, that was not that uncommon at all. A high school diploma was actually not too awfully long ago, at least a couple generations ago, was a decent academic achievement. It wasn't something everyone did. Well, now, fast forward into the 21st century here, it's really not any kind of accomplishment at all, or at least not considered one, considering most people now, far more people go to college and pursue academic interests much more than before because, you know, there are ways college is affordable now that wasn't to previous generations, but they don't always get the chance to. So that you'll see that a lot, especially now. It's troubling when it's not that hard now like it was in, you know, years past to get the diploma. They will see to it every way. There are special ed classes, things like that to help somebody. So there's a lot of paths someone can take to get that high school diploma, and you pretty much just about have to have it for anything now. I've seen even a lot of fast food restaurants and things like that that are no longer taking dropouts. So it's something that just has to be done. And sadly, because of the poor academic performance a lot of these criminals have, whether it be bad grades or behavior, whatever gets them behind or kicked out of school, they start life early on, very early on in their lives, behind the eight ball, so to speak. Without an education, their job opportunities are severely limited. And as you all know, if someone doesn't have good job opportunities, they're more likely to fall in trouble. It's just a fact of life. I can remember my days as a correctional officer in the county jail, and the overwhelming majority of the criminals that were in there at the time were there because of, or not because of, but they, most of them, the overwhelming majority of them, lacked employment, high school diploma, all the basic tools you need in most cases to move ahead and succeed in life. And sadly, Mr. Graham and a lot of other criminals like him start off in life at a disadvantage, not only because of what they're born into, but they're just not able to help themselves and better themselves in school and making the social connections and things that they're going to need later on in life, in adult life, to try to succeed. Now, in the early 70s, he's dropped out of school now, and he goes to work in the construction industry. So that's a good thing. I mean, if a person isn't able to finish high school, they can get a good paying job in the construction trades. At that time, I would say the early 70s, you got Vietnam War going on, things like that. Military can sometimes be an option back then for folks that couldn't pass high school, although I'm not sure he would have qualified with the behavioral issues and probably would have trouble passing any kind of testing or anything that would have been required, but it's not unusual. But there's a good opportunity for him to work, and I'm sure in a big city like Philadelphia, there's most likely good opportunities to work in a trade like construction. So at least here, something positive, something pro-social comes along in his life here. But sometimes our environment and location where we're at can sometimes make it a little bit easier to fall off the wagon, fall off into a criminal way, things of that sort. And that is sadly one thing that worked against him. As quickly as he got this construction job and a chance to maybe earn a good living and learn a trade and things of that sort, he moves into a very poor, crime-ridden, drug-infested neighborhood in North Philadelphia. And with those temptations around, it's not very long after he's there, Mr. Graham decides to go ahead and start using drugs himself. He starts hanging out with pimps and prostitutes that were very common in this neighborhood, and begins to abuse alcohol as well as drugs. So very quickly, now we have somebody that is a high school dropout, had some behavioral problems in school, suffers from some no doubt undiagnosed intellectual disabilities. And now he's in a crime-ridden neighborhood. The temptations are there, the drugs, the prostitutes, all these things for him to fall off the way are now suddenly becoming more available to him. And this kind of reminds me, you know, he's hanging around with prostitutes and pimps and people who are heavy into drugs and criminal activity. And it goes back to that differential association theory. If you go back to the White Collar Crimes podcast, I did a podcast on Edwin Sutherland, who was the professor in Indiana that developed the term white-collar crime back in the 1930s. And he also was famous for another theory called differential association. And that's simply what I used to call, and when I teach my criminal justice classes at the colleges, I always tell the students, just think of it as the birds of a feather theory. That means you pretty much are who you hang out with. And if you hang out with criminals and people of low morality and have all these types of bad practices, there's a very strong chance that you're going to be tempted and fall into that as well. And we see it all the time with juvenile cases. That's especially prevalent when I've had a lot of juvenile probation cases. These kids usually overwhelmingly are running with bad crowds, hanging out with the wrong kids, And, you know, nothing ever good ever comes from that. So now he's being kind of put to the test on this theory because he's in a bad neighborhood. He's in there with a lot of crime and activities that are going to be very tempting, sadly, for Mr. Graham to fall into. Because he does fall into them not long after that, and he branches out himself into drug dealing. In fact, he gets so creative about it, he moves into an apartment complex with mostly vacant units. And if you've ever been into a city that has a lot of those, I know in Carbondale, which is near at the time where I was working at in a different county doing probation cases, I had some clients that lived in some of these types of buildings that very few occupants. Honestly, I don't know how some of them passed not being or passed any type of inspection. A lot of them did end up later getting condemned, but they live in these very filthy, rundown apartment buildings that are a hotbed of drug and criminal activity, and that's where he located to. So that makes it all the more likely. All these things, as you can tell now, are starting to stack up against him, and he's most likely going to fall off into criminal activity pretty soon, because he does. He ropes off an area of the parking lot, and he uses that area to sell drugs. He gets a little creative, ropes it off, starts selling drugs and making money. And this could supplement whatever construction work he got, and apparently he was able at this time to get a disability pension, I'm guessing most likely for intellectual disabilities. So he may be doing okay for himself, so to speak. Got a little construction money, got some drug money coming in, and a steady disability check from the government. And he's doing okay. The neighbors and the locals mostly saw him as a nice guy, known to play basketball with the kids around. No visible signs as what was to come. And a lot of what you're going to find in this case, it is very horrifying what law enforcement would later discover on him. And it's just sad a lot of times when people that are perceived by the community to not be a big problem or anything like that turn out to commit, just as we'll see, very horrific crimes. Because now we're fast forwarding up, we've covered the 70s, we're already up into the 80s now, and this is a time where we're talking the summer 1987 in Philadelphia. And what happened with Mr. Graham at this time would change the memories of a lot of people in that city forever. Because much like the Dahmer case, Jeffrey Dahmer, you remember that in Milwaukee. And I certainly remember that. I was right out of high school when that happened. And I'm sure some of you caught the Netflix movie on that case. It was out a year or two ago. Very, very, very disturbing case. And although there's no record of Mr. Graham ever committing cannibalism and some things that Dahmer did, he drew the attention of to himself much the way Dahmer did, because as you remember, a lot of neighbors complained of very strong foul smells coming from Dahmer's apartment, smells of rotting meat, so to speak, and things of that sort. Well, the same thing was going on in Philadelphia, and a lot of people were complaining of this coming from Graham's apartment. What people probably did live in that building. Again, keep in mind, it was mostly vacant, not entirely, but most of the units in this rundown apartment building he lived in were vacant. So I don't know if that, I'm sure that no doubt helped him get away with what he did for a little bit longer period of time than if it would have been a little bit more crowded and congested in that building. But nonetheless, people do start to smell this and they complain to the landlord. Problem the landlord and anybody else had, any neighbors or any tenants that were in that building found out, is he would not allow anyone to enter, and he even went so far as to board up his front door. Now, soon after boarding up this front door, he fled the residence, took off actually through the fire escape just to be undetected. And the landlord was able to get through the boarded door, he was not able to get through the boarded door, so police were called onto the scene. And as I said, what they discovered in this case was horrifying. And there's going to be some cases coming up that I'm going to cover. I'll give you a little sneak preview on one of them that's even, in my opinion, it's the most horrendous case ever. It'd probably end up being a couple-part series on there. But it is on the serial killer Albert Fish. And plan on covering him on the YouTube channel we're getting ready to kick off and launch. and a few other things that we got going. We got the book going that's going to be out and released soon. As I've talked about, we had a lot of things in the works for a while, switching to a full true crime podcast beyond a white collar crime podcast has changed and slowed things up a bit. But I do want you to just to kind of keep in mind down the road, we're going to have a special part series on Albert Fish, who in my opinion, and I've taught this to my college classes, was the most depraved evil criminal that ever lived. But what these cops found in Philadelphia was pretty horrid too, because they broke through the boarded door, and when they entered, they first discovered a naked corpse of a black woman. And nearby was also the corpse of a partially dressed woman. So right out of the gate, they find two women deceased. Now, the problem they found going through things, as you can expect in most cases like this, the apartment was covered in filth. And there were traces of blood and drugs just strewn all about the apartment. Piles of dirty mattresses everywhere. And it was just overall, as you can expect, very filthy and very unkempt. And immediately, as we said, they found the two dead bodies. But it wouldn't end quite there. As they began to search a little bit more, they did discover that there were inside a closet, they found some skeletal remains. And police found also a green duffel bag. And sadly, inside that bag contained the bones and some other body parts of some, at least one, if not more, of the other victims. Now, police would continue the search of the apartment at this time, and all in all, they found the remains of seven victims. Now, one of the problems they ran into early on is most of these bodies were very decomposed at this point, which is obviously what was triggering the horrible smells coming from that apartment. And that made determining the cause of death difficult initially. In fact, they were only able to on the first two corpses that they found because these two had not started to decompose yet at the rate of the others. So it took a very good amount of forensic work. And at this time in 1987, I'm sure it was nowhere near advanced as it is now. So kudos to the crew there that were able to work and push ahead and continue to find out what had gone on. So they have seven dead bodies, five of which are very decomposed, and you've got signs of blood and drugs and everything else that's gone on in this apartment. The two that were able to determine right away, the two corpses that were found right away, that they had died by strangulation. So they were able to determine that right away. They know there's been a couple murders in this apartment. And a warrant was issued for Harrison, and he managed to evade it for a while. They said there were some spottings, they thought, around town, but somehow they never could get there right in time, or they never were able to take him into custody right away. Now, it was reported that eventually he did contact his mother, who apparently was able to talk him into surrendering. Now, when Graham was taken into custody, he would admit to strangling all seven of these women. They were almost all prostitutes, I think, if not just about all were. And these women, he would murder them and strangle them after having sex and doing drugs with them. Now, he admitted to this, but there was still a trial for this. But his trial does begin in March of 1988. Now, prosecutors right out of the gate sought the death penalty for these seven murders, which could be why they just went ahead and had a trial. You know, if they would have offered him life or a lot of years in prison or something, he might have just taken a plea. But the prosecutors, due to the horrific nature of these crimes and the number of victims, they immediately sought the death penalty. So instead of the case being pled out and done away with fairly quickly, they have to go to trial the next year. Now, he is eventually found guilty, and he was sentenced for all the cases. He was sentenced to six death sentences and one life in prison on this. Now, during the trial, his defense attorneys argued that he was not guilty due to his intellectual disability and drug abuse and everything that put him out of his mind. However, the jury and the courts did not buy that, and as I said, he was found guilty on all counts, six death penalties, and one life in prison. Now, Down the road, this would eventually be committed to life sentences for all of them. And my understanding at that time, I don't know if it's changed now, but at that time in Pennsylvania, a life sentence actually meant just that. You know, it's not like it is in Illinois and other states where I'm at, where life means actually 25 years from now or whatever, you actually do have a shot at parole. That does not mean that. Apparently it didn't at that time, at least. A life sentence actually means a life sentence. Now, it might have changed now. I'm not familiar with Pennsylvania law, but my understanding was at that time that's how it worked. So sadly, a lot of people thought the guy, just the maybe the guy that was just a little slow, but a gentle giant, probably that kind of thoughts people had about him, maybe plays basketball with the kids, just mellow, no. And he had no history of violence prior to this. This is the very strange thing, that somehow while having sex with prostitutes and doing drugs with them, he decided to strangle them. It's never really been found what his true MO maybe was for that. And that could be something that maybe we'll never actually fully know the answer to. But it's a lesson learned that sometimes in the neighborhood, it's, things are not always what they seem. And somebody that seems a little bit of harmless can have some horrific things going on inside their apartment. So this is a sad case, and many times in the crime world, cases do end up like this, and you have victims that die horrific deaths at the hands of violent predators, and sometimes people don't know these predators are out there and even exist. I mean, everybody knew he was a little slow and had some behavioral problems, but I don't think anybody probably thought his criminal activity would progress to the murder rate of 7 women that he did and took the lives and affected the families of the family members of these women forever, and the city's forever been changed. Now, he will spend the rest of his life in prison, and my understanding, he at this time is incarcerated at the Cole Township Prison in Pennsylvania. I don't know if he'll, that's where he's going to spend the rest of his life at, or if he'll be transferred eventually anywhere else or not. But he was born, I think, in 1959, so we're talking early 60s, early mid-60s now. Well, mid-60s, and so I don't know how many years he has left, and most likely not going to live a real long time in prison, but he has been in prison for over 30 years now, so who knows. But it's a sad ending to a very sad case. But one thing it's not sad, I always say, be sure and adopt your next best friend at your local pet shelter. I always recommend that on here, and I recommend you continue to do that. And it would make me really happy if you can like us and follow us on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you are. Give us a good 5-star rating. Be sure and recommend this podcast to friends. Help us get the word out there. And be sure and follow us on Facebook. And if you have an idea for the show, or if you want to be a guest on here, I would be glad to have either from you. So please contact me at ryanhornvt@gmail.com. So I hope you all have a great week, and you'll see us back here next week. God bless. Take care, everybody.